Thank you for the introduction, Carlita. It's always a pleasure to be here. I am calling in today from the unceded land of the Wiat, which is about 300 miles north of San Francisco on the coast in the Redwoods. So how we will go through the morning is we will begin here shortly with an arriving meditation, and then I'll offer a little bit of a dharmat, short talk. We'll have a longer meditation, and then a longer Dharma talk. And within that, if you've been here with me before, we weave in questions and discussion through the whole thing. So everybody is very much part of our time together. So find a comfortable posture, and we'll move into an arriving meditation. An arriving meditation is very much a transition from wherever you've been today before class, and it brings us each into this time together to arrive and settle and land and be here, to put aside for this 2 hours any chores, any tasks, anything that doesn't need to be done. And the invitation to simply be here. So whether you're seated on the furniture or the floor, or reclining or standing, whatever your posture may be, let it be comfortable. Because when it's comfortable, yet attentive and awake and alive, there's very little contention when the body is at ease. The mind can soften, the heart softens. It's the invitation into this beautiful practice, practices of awareness and compassion and wisdom. When the body is comfortable, oftentimes the mind and the heart also experience some comfort, and vice versa. Becoming aware of this breath coming and going. Let it be simple and comfortable. Breathe and know you're breathing. Whatever that means for you. Though you might encourage the out-breath to be a little longer than is the natural rhythm, as a way to land, as a way to settle. Maybe internally saying to yourself with each out-breath, ah. Dropping the shoulders, relaxing the face, softening the chest and the belly, inviting a little comfort into this breath, mind and heart and body. As we move into this time together, the continual invitation is to listen in to what is happening in your own experience, taking in what is happening around you, just being here. As the mind gets a little quieter and the body relaxes, oftentimes there's a little more space to notice whatever may be here. Suzuki Roshi said, "I don't know anything about consciousness. I just try to teach my students how to hear the birds sing." "I don't know anything about consciousness," said Suzuki Roshi. "I just try to teach my students how to hear the birds sing." This is the cultivation of awareness, listening in, listening out. A poem from Sister Dang Nhiem called "Feather at Midday." If I had not stopped to watch a feather flying by, I would not have seen its landing, a tiny pure white feather. Gently, I blew a soft breath to send it back to the spring. If I had not looked up to watch the feather gliding over the roof, I would not have seen the crescent moon hanging at midday. What do we miss? What do we notice when we train our awareness to be present? Welcome back. If you've ever had that moment where you were present enough to notice something that you wouldn't have noticed without just being a little slower, a little more intentional, have you ever had that feeling of, "I'm so glad I saw that"? I've had that. "I'm so glad I heard that. I'm so glad I felt that." And this is our practice. And it is really important to me in our practice that what we get, I'll speak for myself. What's very important to me in our practice is that what I get out of these teachings is why they matter. Because we can study anything and have it stay in sort of a cognitive academic realm. And that's fine. But for a practice like this that can have such profound transformative capacity, it does if you're really present with it. And it takes different amount of times for different ones of us. We come to see why these different teachings matter. And when there is something meaningful in anything that I do, it sticks. And then it becomes important to me. So as always, whenever I am here and offering from my own experience what is happening in this practice, it really is a four-part framework that I've experienced, and maybe you do too. First, there is the cognitive understanding of whatever it is we're talking about, right? It's all up here. We're thinking about it. It's just how it works. And this is how we come to understand whatever the teaching is. But it stays up here as a concept until we actually experience the intention of that, right? So I can say to you, be sure to look around. Be sure to pause enough. Be sure to just slow down enough to look around wherever you are, whether you're inside or outside or whatever the experience is. And you can say, oh, right, she's reminding me to look around. And then how many times, and we can do this really simply, how many times do you get in the car to drive somewhere and you go from point A to point B and you have no idea how you got there? You just get there. And this is a common experience because we're not really present. But when you actually are present and you go from point A to point B and you notice something along the way, maybe the dogwoods are in bloom that you hadn't seen before, or the red bud, or who knows what it is, but you start getting, oh, this is what that means to be aware, to be present. The experience of being present then gets out of the mind and into the body, into the senses, literally sight, sound, taste, touch, all of it. And then it's experience. Then you go, oh yeah, right, this is what it means to be present. And out of that experience of noticing, oftentimes there's a realization of meaning making. Why is this important? And through those three, let's say it's legs of a table, however you want to think about it, cognitive understanding, experiential understanding, making some meaning, why is it important? Then the fourth of these is, that is the awakening or the embodiment or the integration of the first three. Then it becomes part of the system. So let's talk about it in terms of metta practice even. We understand what loving kindness practice is when we first come into it, mostly, you know, it's we get training in it. Then we start practicing with it, and maybe it can feel like the heart moves. We start feeling like, oh, this feels really good to wish myself well. Or for me, in my mind, to picture anybody here on my screen, which I do this, and offer the metta to somebody who's popping into my mind from being on the screen, or everybody all at once. And that feels good too. And then I realize it starts to be a meaningful practice to me. And you know that when we offer out our metta to each other, at the end of our meditation, it's meaningful, right? And this is something that has become habitual in our sangha. And when it becomes habitual, it's just what we do. It's not rote. It's actually, this is the integration of the practice, the embodiment of how this works. So this is how I like to approach practice for myself. And I offer that to you too, is that when you hear different teachings or you read something, that let it in and ask yourself, why does this matter? And I don't mean, oh, who cares? No, that's not what I mean at all. What I mean is, why does this matter? And there may be practices or teachings that you say, that doesn't land for me. That's fine. It doesn't have to. totally doesn't have to. But there will be those ones that you say, oh yeah, that matters. Work on those. The ones that actually move your heart, that pique your interest, do that. And you'll trust that you'll get what you need. And there may be a day sometime later that you hear that same teaching that you kind of shined on before. And you go, oh, actually want to listen to that one. That one has, that's landing for me now. And this is how the Dharma works. It just gets in us bit by bit by bit. Suzuki Roshi gave a really great metaphor for how the Dharma gets inside of us. And if I can get this right, he said, you know, if you go outside in a downpour, you get completely drenched and it all just falls right off you. And so if you dive in and try to learn everything about the Dharma that you can, it's impossible to take it all in. But if you go out in the fog and it's a little bit misty out, you start to get damp. And bit by bit, it starts to get inside of you. This is my experience of how I want to be in practice with the Dharma, is to take in what I can take in, to let it seep in slowly over time. Because when something seeps in slowly over time, it's been my experience that it takes root. It actually happens. So that was not what I was going to say at all. This is kind of how this works. So today I want to offer part two of what I shared last week. And last week I had just come from a river trip, and I was talking about being out in southeastern Utah in amazingly old indigenous land with lots of petroglyphs and pictographs and wild donkeys and wild horses, and really just being deep inside of nature and truly loving and enjoying that. And I was reminded of these three instructions that Pema Chodron has offered in one of her books. She says there are three things you need to do to live a life. Be fully present, feel your heart, and engage the next moment without an agenda. Meaning, you know, having this big, open perspective, equanimity, understanding impermanence, understanding that we are just a blip on the scale. So we talked a lot about that last week, about being a blip in time. And I offered, Carlita, is it easy to pick up that picture that we showed last week of the pale blue dot?
Let me locate that.
Okay. So I also offered this photo that Carlita will bring in. For those who weren't here last week, I want to show this to you. And this is a piece from Carl Sagan that he wrote. I'm not going to read it all now. This is from February 1990. And the Voyager was out in space taking pictures of what Voyagers take pictures of. And you'll see shortly this picture of the Earth out in the middle of nowhere. It's called the pale blue dot. And what I was sharing about this is that in order to be fully present, in order to cultivate the heart, to feel the heart, we can start with those two things, which I often do start with, which feel like building blocks. But I wanted to offer it in the opposite. Let's start with the big, huge picture. Because if we start with the big picture about why are we doing what we're doing, to really understand that we are just these tiny little beings on this speck of a planet, it gives us some perspective as to who we are for ourselves and each other, our relationships, the importance of understanding that it isn't all about me, right? And how we need to go from me to we, and we live in this much bigger we. So when Carlita, anytime you get it up, you can just, there we go. Okay, so this is the photo of the pale blue dot. And Carlita, could you just point out the Earth here? Check that out, everybody. Isn't that amazing? That is truly amazing. Here we are. And the way Carl Sagan talked about it, he said, We are on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. A mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. Okay, thanks, Carlita. So I wanted you to see that to bring you up to where we were at the end of last week. And we talked a lot about that within this, you know, here we are on a little tiny corner of a speck of that dot, wherever you live, wherever I live. Doesn't it make you feel small? I mean, it's, and all of our arguments and frustrations and the things we think that are so important, but when we get that biggest view of all, the folly that is true. And so the importance of learning to live in a way that is fully present, to feel our hearts, to take seriously cultivating our inner North Star, our inner moral compass, taking seriously these practices of non-harming and committing to studying what non-harming is forever. You know, there's not just one thing that is non-harming. It is a complete study that goes with, how am I going to be fully present? How am I going to tend and cultivate this heart? The truth that greed and hatred and confusion or ignorance create suffering. And the truth that non-greed, non-ill will, and clarity create well-being, not just for me, but for each one of us. So we talked about that, and that led us to a bit of a conversation about, that all sounds good, but life is hard, right? Life is truly difficult, and there is a lot of dukkha. Dukkha, the Pali word for suffering or friction or the sense of not quite rightness. And I offered this very beautiful teaching from Norman Fisher that I'm going to offer to you again, because it will then be the ground of how we can talk more today about the experience of becoming fully present in this body at this time, the experience of cultivating goodness of heart. So just to back up a little bit about dukkha, that sense of not quite right, is oftentimes when we are in a challenging time of varying intensity, we can think of it as something is wrong. Something is wrong, right? This is just our semantics. If I'm not perfectly in balance and perfectly comfortable, I need to fix something. But that flies in the face of what the Buddha taught, that this is just life. This is just how it is. And we actually are training in this practice to be with all of the different shades of not quite rightness, of dukkha. So we learn to adapt and to adjust, but also to say, yes, this is how it is. I'm not exempt. So here's the piece from Norman that is worth reading to you again, because it actually has been deeply helpful to me in my practice, both my sitting practice, but my daily walking around being in my life practice. Norman Fisher, again, is a beloved Bay Area teacher, Zen priest, and poet. Dukkha is not a mistake. It's not a correctable situation. It's human consciousness. Dukkha is every moment, every experience of our lives, not just the things that obviously seem to be dukkha, like pain and suffering and loss. Pain, suffering, loss are built into every moment of consciousness, even if they don't appear on the surface to be pain, suffering, and loss. The great and beautiful secret of meditation practice is this. Now, does that pique your interest? You know, when somebody says, I'm going to tell you the answer, I'm going to tell you the secret. This is such a great, great phrase. The great and beautiful secret of meditation practice is this. You can experience dukkha with equanimity. You can experience dukkha with equanimity. Isn't equanimity the secret of happiness? If you tried to eliminate dukkha, it would be like trying to eliminate life. But if you can receive dukkha with equanimity, then, in a way, it's no longer dukkha. Impermanence could be the most devastating fact of your life, and often it is. But impermanence could also be incredibly beautiful if you receive it with equanimity. It could be peace itself. Dukkha is this basic fact of life. So when we get the big picture, we see the bigger perspective, we know that dukkha is included in this. We could say that the whole thing of what we're studying here is the reality of joy, the reality of sorrow, and how it all works together all at the same time. Because it does. So are there any questions on anything that I've said so far? Or comments? Peter, please.
Morning, Heidi.
Good morning.
I was angry about things yesterday, and I tried to sit and stuff like that, and it got a little better, and still angry. This morning, when you did that arriving meditation, I found actually what I had is sorrow. It's a lot of sadness. And then I don't know what that is or from where I got panicked a little bit. And then you talk about dukkha. And then I kind of rationalized into, I don't know if this is true, that I was not accepting what's going on at present. So I'm angry. And now I'm looking at this unsatisfaction and things that just simply doesn't stick, like Buddha said, right? You anything has the capability to arise will fade away, will go away, things like that. And now I'm understanding that a little more, and that brings a lot of sadness. And I don't want that. I don't like that. What do we do about it?
What do we do about that? I'm not sure I got the whole question. What do we do about the sorrow?
Yeah, in the question I was asking, I wrote, what do I do other than naming it while I meditate? Right?
Okay, that's, yeah.
And wait for it to go away.
Okay, that's really good. That's a really good question. Sometimes things don't go away as quickly as we want them to. You know, when it's painful, when it's difficult. We don't have a magic timeline around impermanence, the fact that things are changing. So how to be with something that isn't moving as quickly as we want, we can't think it away. And as much as you understand, oh, there is anger about a situation that I don't want to be here, but it is, right there, that's the very poignant place between the first, the second, and the third noble truth. So let me just digress a little bit. The first noble truth that says life includes dukkha, which is exactly what Norman is saying here, dukkha is not a mistake. In that dukkha, in that awareness of anger, let's just name it because you have, let's create noble truth 1.5 before we get to the second noble truth, okay? First noble truth is that dukkha exists. Life includes difficulty. 1.5 is the second foundation of mindfulness, the awareness of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So there's the feeling tone of the discomfort itself. Let's call it the anger. So somewhere on the spectrum between a little uncomfortable and very uncomfortable, my hunch is that you experience the anger in a way that this is unpleasant, right?
Yep.
Are you with me? Okay. Second noble truth says, the cause of our suffering is the imperative in the mind that things be other than they are. I don't want to feel this discomfort. The anger is uncomfortable. I don't want to feel it. I'm going to push it away. I'm going to resist it. That's the second noble truth, right?
Yeah.
The next part Noble Truth 2.5. Before we get to 3, and 3 is peace is possible when the mind subsides and lets go and stops arguing with the truth, we can relax. That's the end of that moment of suffering. But what do we do, to your question, between I'm resisting and I want this to go away, but it's not going away. It's uncomfortable. It's unpleasant. So Noble Truth 2.5 is let the heart enter this. This is where compassion arises, that says in your kindest voice, oh, Peter, you're having a hard time. Oh, Peter, this really is uncomfortable. It will go away. Maybe not yet. Take a breath. Maybe do a few metta phrases, understanding that you can't make something change according to some other timeline. It will change. But for right now, may I be at ease. Bring in some sort of supportive way to engage your heart. And then you wait. And then you wait. But you don't wait there with twiddling your thumbs or with a tight fist. You just know that you trust and have confidence that you can do this. And that you don't have to be the anger. You're not, the anger is arising. It is there. You wish it wasn't there. Or whatever the situation is that is bringing the anger about, but you can also be kind to yourself in the middle of it. So it might be in your meditation that what you're doing is metta practice, primarily. Because you can name it, you know what it is, you just said that, but sometimes naming it can intensify it. But actually what is necessary is to bring some kindness to the truth of the situation.
Because I thought when that anger subsides, I'm going to be feeling peaceful. It will be great.
Wouldn't it?
Sorrow shows up and I was totally surprised and caught by it. And I'm like, okay, I went from a strong, unpleasant state to a lower, low tone, unpleasant. That doesn't help. But this is fine. It's the same. It will go away too.
Give it a try. Give it a try.
And that meta, thank you so much for the advice.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Heidi. You're so welcome, Peter. We're not supposed to get sick. We're not supposed to age. We're not supposed to die. We're not supposed to experience frustration. Whoever said that, as my grandmother would say, where is it written that you're going to be happy all the time? So this is all about that piece of how do we maintain perspective? How do we maintain perspective? A wider view. Because the wider view, it doesn't mean that the dukkha isn't really uncomfortable. It is. And what is our relationship to it? And awareness practice, the Dharma, all of this, it doesn't mean that difficulty isn't going to happen. That would just, that's a fantasy. What it means is we change our relationship to the truth of our lives. And so, sometimes Sylvia has talked about the difference between saying, why me versus why not me? Of course, that's the truth of dukkha. Because none of us is exempt from what it means to be alive in this body. None of us at all. So I'm going to pause here. So, let's move into our meditation. Please find a posture that works well in your body. And this is going to be a little bit more of a guided meditation than I usually offer, because what I want to do is offer you this meditation that really brings you into your body. How the Buddha said, there is a body. And one of the most direct ways of becoming fully present is through the body. So, partially guided. And if that bugs you, you can tune me out. If it doesn't bug you, follow along. Okay. The invitation is to close the eyes, but you don't have to if you don't want to. You can have a gentle, soft gaze downward. And if your eyes are closed or open, just noticing any visual perception. Could be a sense of light or dark, shape or shadow. And becoming aware of the eyes themselves, knowing there are eyeballs in the eye sockets. Sensing the eyeballs. And then noticing the touch of the eyelids if your eyes are closed. And now shifting your awareness to hearing. Not so much going out to listen for something or to something. This is a wider perspective of coming into the sense of sound. Just noticing what you hear. Sounds close by or sounds further away. Both. And then sensing the ears themselves, the structure of the outer ear, ear lobes, behind the ears, all around the external ear. Maybe sensing inside the ears. You can even visualize the ear canal and the eardrum. Sometimes this visualization can bring a sense, a tactical sense. By visualizing inside the ear, you might have a sense of it. Can you feel the inside of the ear just by thinking about it? Now becoming aware of smell. There might be some fragrance, some aroma, an odor that you're aware of. Maybe not. But simply asking the question, do I smell anything? And then shifting to taste. Is there a lingering taste in the mouth from anything that you've had earlier today? Maybe yes, maybe no, simply asking. which might take you into a closer experience of inside the mouth, just noticing. Becoming aware of touch. Notice the hands. Wherever the hands are, what are they touching, if anything? Each other, the thighs, maybe the furniture. Noticing the place where your body is touching the furniture or the floor. Could be your seat or the backs of the thighs. Maybe the feet inside your socks or shoes, or if your feet are exposed. Just the sense of being barefoot. Becoming aware of any sensation of touch. Maybe there's pressure, tingling, vibration. Whatever the sensation may be, simply notice. Becoming aware of the earth element, the bones, the teeth, the hardnesses in the body. Maybe clench the teeth momentarily to be reminded of this earth element, or even press your fingers together, pressing on the palm and the back of the hand at the same time, feeling those bones, this earth element. Reflecting for a moment how connected we are to this earth, being of the earth, all these minerals, everything coming into us, all the food we eat, grown in the earth, becomes us, this earth element. Becoming aware of the fire element. What is the temperature like? What are you noticing? Maybe cold hands, warm hands, warm or cold feet. How is this fire element present for you? And the element of the air. You may feel a little breeze touching your skin. You may not. But this air element of breathing, really sensing this inhale coming into your body through the nose or wherever it comes in for you. filling the lungs completely. And then letting the air back out. The exhale. How intricately we're connected through this element of the air, everything we breathe in, everything we breathe out. The air element. And the water element. Bring some awareness to the inside of your mouth, and you can sense the water element right away. Thirsty, not thirsty, whatever is there. Maybe dry lips, not dry lips. It's said that the water element is that which connects everything else. All the fluids inside the body, the lymph, the blood, tears, the moisture that keeps the skin from cracking, held together by this water element. If you're aware of what watershed you live in, or nearby, where does your water come from? Bringing that to mind, or look it up later. But it's said that the body is something like 70% water. So for me, my water comes from the Mad River, which means I'm mostly the Mad River. And lastly, of all of these senses and elements, is consciousness itself, this thinking mind. The feeling heart. As we went through each of the senses and the elements, maybe there was a sense of, I like this, I don't like that. This is pleasant, this is unpleasant. The opinions, the commentary of heart-mind, mind-heart. Just noticing that. This is being fully present. So finding a place where you can rest your awareness now. In one of these senses or in one of these elements. And try to stay there for the rest of the meditation, a few more minutes. Come back when the mind wanders and begin again. Fully present with this place you can rest. And drawing some awareness to the heart. Letting yourself sense into the state of heart right now. And offering yourself an internal bow of gratitude for showing up today. For being here now in Sangha, the beauty of that. Offering yourself a little metta. May I be well, may I be happy, may I be at ease. Any metta phrases are the right ones. And then thinking of somebody you saw on screen today in our Sangha, offering that person the same phrases. May you be well. May you be happy. May you be at ease. So let's take a few minutes here. If there's anybody that you are thinking about that you would like to bring into the room in our collective Sangha metta practice, you are welcome to unmute and say who you're thinking about. I would like to remember Tina Turner. You know, Tina Turner had a tremendously devoted Buddhist practice that she credits with saving her life. And she was very open about it and a role model for all of us about what is possible to overcome and how practice is powerful and healing and holds so much promise. You know, what's love got to do with it? Everything, everything. Okay, everybody, let's take 5 minutes and come back. Oops. Okay, welcome back. So what I would like to share with you is a couple of things. Overall, you can find me and everything that I'm teaching here on some Wednesdays and also through pacificmindfulness.com. And that's my website where you can find everything that I'm teaching. And specifically, I want to let you know about both Sunday Sangha and Monday morning sunrise meditation. So a couple of Sundays a month, I offer a hybrid. It's from 10:30 to noon Pacific time. So the link is on my website on the class webpage. You're welcome to join anytime. As well, every Monday morning now, 6:15 a.m., we are joining for a half an hour meditation and a little time to talk with each other. And both are on a Dana basis, as is this class. So come anytime. And I want to talk a little bit. I want to take a minute to talk about Dana. Whatever you offer for this class, for any offering that is Dana-based, pay what you can. It is a practice. Dana is a very real practice of reciprocity, of generosity. And sometimes it's easy to forget because you can get the link and just pop on. And many people say, yeah, I'm going to go back later and offer a fee. And actually, a lot of times it doesn't happen. And I want you to know that whatever you offer actually makes a really big difference. It supports Spirit Rock and it supports the teachers. And if you come to anything that I offer that's not through Spirit Rock, through Pacific Mindfulness, that I also offer on a Donna basis, your support is critical to help me do what I'm doing. So imagine, you know, if you were in person and there's the Donna basket, what would you put in the basket? And can you do the same thing online? So thank you for all of your consideration with that. It actually makes a really big difference. Okay. So I want to go back to open out a little bit of a Q&A about how was that senses and elements meditation? Were you able to stick with it? Were you able to be in your body? Because one of these instructions that we talked about earlier is, how do we cultivate being fully present? And doing it through the senses, if you're really present with the senses, you can't be anywhere else. It's such a wonderful, accessible way to become right here. So, hi.
I wanted to respond to your interest, Heidi, in how the guided meditation.
Yeah, I really want to know.
I thought it was wonderful. I didn't know what to expect when you said you were going to do something a little different that was, you know, longer more than you, because you usually don't do that in my experience either. And then especially when you got to water, because that's a particular passion of mine. And I feel very deeply connected to water. And when you said that, I've known this thing about how high percentage of our bodies are made of water, but I never thought about it as the water that I drink. And I have a very emotional response to that.
Oh, wow.
And in reflecting on that, I realize that that touches into my deep, deep desire increasingly over time that when I'm in nature, this longing to really, really feel the recognition that I am part of all of that that's going on around me.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a frustration almost. I don't know if that's a little bit of a strong word, but feeling the moisture in my mouth of the water that I have been drinking and feeling that connection feels like such a beautiful way of coming closer to that desire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, the thing about longing, I'm really glad you used that word. I think longing touches into something that is deeply true inside of us. There's a connection to longing and belonging. And I'm not trying to be kitschy with words, but I think there's something about this that when you know there's a longing to have the experience of being deeply connected to the natural world, it's because we are. It's inextricable. We are. And what's important is to have experiences where you actually get yourself out and you go do that, because what it does is reinforces and strengthens the truth of that, of the connection.
It is just that, and maybe it's connected to what you were saying about something starts as cognitive, and I have this frustration. I will now use the word frustration very wholeheartedly. This frustration that I know this in my head, but it hasn't dropped into the experience in the way that I know that I exist.
Yep. And because we live up here.
Yeah.
And this is what I meant when I said earlier about how we get stuck in concepts and mm-hmm. we need to experience it. It is a dropping down into the body to experience it, to know this is important, to have the meaningful connection between understanding, experiencing. It's meaningful. There's a realization, and then it gets deeply integrated and embodied. So not to question that longing, but to know, oh, this is real. This is what's true. So if you go out for a walk, leave your earbuds at home. I mean that. Like, don't listen to anything. Just go outside for a walk and smell and listen. And I know you're going to have opportunities later this month for this. And yes. So we're going to work on this.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. This practice, when you hear language, this is for everybody, when you hear the word invitation in this practice, that's what it is. This is not a demand. It's not a requirement. It is an invitation to touch into your own mind, your own heart, your own body in a way that works for you. And what works for you and you and you is different for me, for all of us. But this is the invitation to get to know yourself from the inside out. And that is what we are doing here. Appreciating your aliveness, that guided meditation of coming into the experience of the body is a way to get to know the body, to become fully present. And there may be in parts of that meditation that didn't land for you. That's fine. It all doesn't have to land. It might be that you totally fell asleep or you went in and out. It's totally normal. So we take away the requirement that it needs to be any specific way, but that meditation was an offering of one way, one modality to be present through the senses, through the elements. So for Lisa Marie, the water was powerful. Somebody else might have found visual perception to be the doorway in. So by offering a variety of ways to become fully present, most people will find what resonates for them. So take what resonates and just leave the rest behind. Leave the rest behind. This is a really important thing. So that's about being fully present. And now there's a whole section of the talk that I'm not even getting to because it's 10 to 12, but that's okay, because it's I think that it is always lovely to talk about the heart. So this is the third of the instructions from Pema, you know, to be fully present, to engage the moment from a wide perspective, not being willing to not know what's going to happen next, and to feel the heart. So all the way back to Peter's question in the beginning of our time together, what do I do when I can name the anger, I can name the anger, and it's not going away, and it's uncomfortable? We bring in the heart, right? And this is this really great teaching from Sylvia that many of you have heard before, where she says, use your sweetheart voice, right? Isn't that the great line? Use your sweetheart voice. This means be kind to yourself. Sweetheart, you're in pain. You feel anger. Okay. Take a breath. And now another one. We'll figure out what to do. But she doesn't say we're going to figure out what to do in the next minute, right? We start with this kindness towards ourselves. We name what is happening just as Peter did. Anger is here. It's not going away yet. Okay, take a breath. Take another one. May I be at ease? And we let the mind relax about it. Like, don't have to figure it all out right now. That's the other thing in this about feel your heart, which is, can we bring in patience, which is, as Ajahn Suchito says, the definition of patience is to relax the edges of time, to make space for something else to arise. I think that's absolutely brilliant. The definition of patience, relaxing the edges of time to make space, the opportunity for something else to arise. So if we were to bring this back to traumatic experience, if you could think your way through it, you would. You can't think your way through what is so deep in the body. It takes time for it to be held and loved and understood. And it kind of has its own timeline. And so we relax the edges of time. So healing can happen. Think about a gash. Let's think about a deep wound. If I cut my arm and it went pretty deeply and I needed to go get stitches, okay, let's say it's that kind of gash. So the wound gets cleaned out, maybe gets stitched up. But the way a wound heals is from the inside, deep from the inside out. If wounds healed just by putting a Band-Aid on it or just a scab on the top, what's deep and underneath and inside there wouldn't heal necessarily. This is why things need air. You can't just stick a Band-Aid on something and you got to open that up. Same is true for the heart. Same is true for the mind and the gut. We heal from the inside out when, as we deeply understand our own lives. When I said earlier to get to know ourselves from the inside out, this is how this works. And so we let it take the time it's got to take the time that it needs. So back to Sylvia's question. I was fine in the Dharma talk. I was fine in the meditation. And then I wasn't. Then all this stuff came up because we give it space. So when we give something space, it can move and work itself. And that's where the healing comes, in my view and in my experience. And this is why this practice matters. And it is, as much as I say it's one modality, it's a profoundly poignant, powerful modality. Hafiz, the great poet, said, "You carry all the ingredients to turn your life into a nightmare. Don't mix them. You carry all the ingredients to turn your existence into joy. Mix them. Mix them." This is feeling the heart, right? That big overarching teaching that the Buddha gave us, I teach suffering and the end of suffering. What when I do it will be for my long-term welfare and happiness? Do that. What when I do it increases my suffering? Stop doing that. And this is, takes a lot of practice to understand what are the habits that create the suffering, what are the habits that create the well-being. I have so much more. As usual, I have so much more. Here's the thing about the heart and why these heart practices are so effective. Because they change us, because they tap into what is so real inside of us, hopefully over time what we're doing is learning to love ourselves deeply. Really learning to love ourselves deeply. And when others show affection and love for us because they see it in us, and we go, oh yeah, you know, we just dismiss it. I don't know what you're seeing in me. This practice starts to undo that. When somebody sees our goodness, it's telling us we're good. We are good, and we can believe that. And when you see goodness in somebody else, and you're telling them that, in whatever way you do, this is a reciprocal relationship, and this matters. The Dalai Lama says, through kindness, through affection, through honesty, through truth and justice, toward all others, we ensure our own benefit. This is not a matter of complicated theorizing. It's a matter of common sense. And this is why I love this practice. And I'm here for good, because it is a matter of common sense. I have found that this practice makes so much sense to me. I don't have to be a card-carrying member of anything. I don't have to belong to a this or a that to train in awareness and kindness and wisdom and love, to give it back, to receive it. So let me read that to you again. This is so important. Through kindness, through affection, through honesty, through truth and justice towards all others, we ensure our own benefit. We really do. This is not a matter of complicated theorizing. It's a matter of common sense. We are the primary recipients of all of our actions. Let them be born out of love. Let them be born out of this goodness. And lastly, here's a poem from Rosemary Wattola Traumer. This is called What We're Doing Here. This is why we are here. Not merely to survive, but to fall in love with the white-breasted hawk and the rainbow fish, with the lonely sidewalk and the shadows of ourselves, fall in love with the hands of the woman wearing yellow and the girl who loves chocolate and the boy who loves cars and the man who makes us want to be a better version of ourselves. We are here to fall into unmanageable love, to love beyond reason, beyond fact, beyond certainty. We are here to lose all our ideas about love and know it as the next choice we make, the next word we say, the next invitation we offer ourselves. We are here to love the world and each other, the way whales love water, the way blue loves a peacock, the way night-blooming jasmine loves night. This is what we're doing. So I thank you all for joining me today. It's been such a pleasure to be here with you, to wrestle. You know, we wrestle with some of these things. This is not so easy. But I so love the questions and the conversation and the pushing back and the being willing to say, yeah, but what do you mean about this or that? Let's keep doing that together. Because that's where the juice is. That's where the juice is. So may all beings be peaceful and happy and come to the end of suffering. And just experience some love. Experiencing some love. Thank you, everybody. I'll be back the end of next month. Join me anytime, anywhere I am.